I'd like to share with you this morning a short passage from the book of Leviticus. When strangers sojourn with you in your land, you shall do them no wrong. The strangers who sojourn with you shall be to you as natives among you, and you love them as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Soon the day will arrive when we live without fear. We hope. You know, it's not often that a Unitarian Universalist minister preaches on a text from the book of Leviticus. Leviticus, the third book of the Hebrew Bible, largely focuses on the rules of how to do sacrificial rituals. This passage I shared with you comes from the latter section of the book, which is commonly known as the holiness codes, which are the most important things a Jew must do to be right with God. Essentially, what I hear the priestly writer of Leviticus saying to their community is, treat the stranger in your midst well. That's a moral commandment. It's something that is required of us. Well, as you can see by this reference in the ancient Hebrew text, the question of how we treat the stranger in our land has been around for a long time and is, as its placement in the holiness codes reminds us, a moral, an ethical, a theological question. It is a question that requires us to apply our religious values and teachings. Now, the Jews certainly were not the only ones to address the issue of how one is to treat the stranger in their midst. In the Quran, Muslims are instructed, do good to neighbors who are strangers, the companion by your side and the wayfarer that you meet. In the parable of the Good Samaritan and throughout the Gospels, Jesus taught that we must care for the strangers in our midst. All these texts suggest that the way we treat the strangers that live among us is a defining characteristic of the faith that is within us. As Unitarian Universalists, we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person, as well as justice, equality, and compassion in our human relationships. So today we ask the question, does the way we treat the immigrants among us in our country, in our community, affirm their dignity and worth? Are the policies we pursue in our nation and now even at the level of individual states and cities, just and compassionate? And finally, and perhaps most importantly, how are we on the personal level, through our own actions and attitudes, treating the stranger in our midst? As we approach these questions, I think we need to keep a few things in mind. First, as is pointed out in that brief passage from Leviticus, Jews could identify with the experience of being strangers in another land. In the book of Deuteronomy, Moses puts it even more clearly when he instructs the Hebrew people that to begin their prayers of gratitude, they must say these words, a wandering Aramean was my ancestor. He went down into Egypt and lived as an alien. I want us to begin this sermon with similar words in our hearts, because unless you are 100% Native American, you or your forebears were strangers in this land, just like our immigrants of today are. It doesn't matter if you are a Mayflower descendant, the great-grandchild of an Irish farmer who fled the great potato famine, the grandchild of an Italian craftsman who came here to earn a worthy living constructing our great buildings, child of a Jew who somehow escaped the Holocaust, or a Cuban who fled the Castro regime. You or your ancestors were the strangers in this land at some time. We all share the same history as today's immigrants, both those documented and undocumented. And the next thing I want to acknowledge is that some of the immigrants in our country broke the law, either in coming here or in staying here after their permission to do so expired. Not most of them, but some. And I fully understand that it is not fair to the person who legally waits in line for years and years to get permission to enter this country when someone else gets here by sneaking. And as a former prosecutor, I understand how important it is for a society to uphold its laws. And when those who come to this nation legally or illegally, doesn't matter, when they participate in violent criminal activity, they should be arrested and tried and punished and deported if they, after they've served their time. I agree that our government has the right to regulate immigration and control the number of people who enter this country. But I hope that there is a fair and just policy that remembers that immigrants have always been the lifeblood of this country. And I hope it's a policy that allows those to whom we give permission to enter this country and work in this country the right to have their families join them here in a reasonable amount of time. And I hope it will be a policy that does not discriminate in terms of race or ethnicity or any other variable. This, folks, I don't believe has been the case of recent. There are real issues of justice and compassion in the way we treat our immigrant community. And to these issues, we have really pretty much turned a blind eye. And why is that? Because in so many ways, we benefit from what's going on right now. We as a society have been complicit in the undocumented workers' violation of the law. We have looked the other way for decades. Maybe we're not proud of that. Maybe we don't want to admit that, but that's the truth. And we have done so largely because we have enjoyed the fruits of their cheap labor. You know, at a certain level, I understand the thinking of those who say all those people who came here illegally should be sent back. But for many reasons, that is not and cannot be the answer. First of all, because it's not financially possible. It would cost far more than our federal budget could bear. And that's not the only reason we can't afford to do so. You know, studies have shown that even if all the unemployed U.S. citizens were willing to take the jobs that these people do, which most of them are not willing to, according to those studies, we would still not fill the void in those industries like agriculture, where we heavily depend on their work. One of the most foolish economic decisions we could make would be to try to send back all those who are here without proper documentation. Even if at one point deportation might have been an appropriate response, with 11 million undocumented immigrants in our country now, it's way too late for this kind of a solution. But much more important than the financial cost and the mere impossibility of the task is the moral cost of doing so. Is it right to deport people who have been here serving us for 20 or 30 years, who have raised their family here with some children born here and some children brought here from their previous home, who are hardworking and have never been in trouble with the law, who are part of the fabric of a community? This morning we began our worship service by singing that wonderful hymn that ends with the line with this petition. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage, eyes to see and ears to hear. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage for the facing of this hour, for the living of these days. What I believe has been so lacking from the discussion on immigration in our country is wisdom and especially courage. We seem to be run by a government of people who worry more about being reelected than they do about doing the right thing. And it can feel hopeless at times. I still have not got over last year's failure by the U.S. Congress to pass that Simple Dream Act. A piece of legislation that just addressed a tiny piece of this immigration problem. And this bill was not going to give amnesty to wrongdoers. It provided for those who were brought to this country as children by no choice of their own, a way to earn citizenship. So many youth, including those served by some of the agencies that will be represented in our forum today, were excited because it proposed that by going to college or by serving in the military and being a model member of the community, they could become citizens and realize their dream. And let's be clear, these children did nothing wrong, and for the most part, this is the only country they knew, and they wanted to contribute to it, or they want to. How could we deny them? How can we deny them that opportunity? How could we deny ourselves the future benefits of their contribution to our society? I've met some of the dreamers, and they are as qualified as any of our U.S. citizen youth to do great things in our country. It's a tragedy that the DREAM Act didn't pass. And why didn't it pass? Because there's an appalling lack of wisdom and lack of courage in our country and our politics surrounding this issue of immigration. And in a similar vein, does it make any sense at all to deny in-state tuition and financial assistance, as most states, not all states do, to bright, talented students who have graduated at the top of their high school classes and have all the potential to be great contributors to our society? Doing so leaves us with lots of people stuck in a rut, lots of young people stuck in a rut, living in fear that they or their parents will be deported if they do anything to draw attention to themselves. What are these talented young women and men going to do if they have no route to a decent future? I'll tell you, it doesn't take a lot of wisdom to figure out the answer to that question. What would you do if you had done everything right and your route to the future was blocked for no fault of your own? Instead of being productive members of society, we're encouraging them to do nothing, or worse, to get involved with illegal means of making a living, because that may be the only options open to them. We have to speak up and say that youth who have been brought to this country and grown up in this country need to have the same opportunities to succeed in life as youth that are U.S. citizens do. It's not only in their best interest. It is in the best interest of every one of us. I mentioned how these children who are living here without proper documentation live with a constant sense of fear. And so do their brothers and sisters who were born in this country, but the fear that their parents could be deported. And of course, those who are here illegally or whose husband or wife is, probably because they overstayed a visa so their family could stay together, live in fear. They constantly fear that something they say or do will get them or their loved ones arrested and deported. I cannot imagine what raising a family in that kind of context must be like. Just before the sermon, we sang that song, "Soon the Day Will Arrive When We'll No Longer Live in Fear." I hope so, that the day will arrive when they no longer have to live in fear. But I worry that we're going in just the other direction. We are increasingly treating the stranger in our midst in ways that increase the fear. Perhaps you've heard the latest idea with respect to solving the immigration problem. It's called self-deportation. Now, at first, it sounds interesting. Everyone just goes home on their own, and it doesn't cost the government anything. But what the concept really involves is doing all that we can to make life so uncomfortable and so full of fear for those who are here without proper documentation that they will go back to the country of their origin. You know, we see this approach now being used in states like Arizona, Alabama, and South Carolina. The approach is called the choke point theory. What it involves is that every necessary function where a family needs to engage with any outside authority becomes a potential choke point, a place where you have to provide evidence of citizenship or your legal residency. We're talking about here a United States where parents are afraid to enroll their kids in school, afraid to get kids vaccination shots, afraid to seek medical care, because they will first be asked to produce proof of citizenship. Every institution of government and those beyond, not just the police here, everything from social services to health services, become a de facto part of the immigration enforcement mechanism in this plan. Fear to call the police to report a crime or fear even to ride in a car already nearly overwhelm those who do not have correct papers. And adding fear to almost every important engagement in their life is outrageous. You know, to argue that adding this fear and making it so extreme that people will find a way to leave the country is contrary, in my mind, to any moral teachings. You know, the advocate of this choke point self-deportation approach believed that the moral and social and economic practice of inflicting so much fear and suffering on immigrants so they'll leave is justified. And I do not. And my faith, and I think our faith, what it teaches, tells me that this is not how we treat strangers that are among us. These are our neighbors. We need to treat them as we would any neighbor, not with cruelty, but with love. We've heard during the last month from various agencies that serve the immigrant community, those here legally and those who are not. We've heard that employers in our midst have taken advantage of those who are afraid to complain by not paying them their wages at all, by not paying minimum wages, or by not paying them the overtime that they're entitled to. We learned that over $1 million has been pursued and recovered right in our own area from one of our speakers a few weeks ago. We've heard that in this community where fear is ever present, it's not surprising that so is domestic abuse. Today we'll hear more real stories about how right here in our community we treat the strangers. We'll hear about the difficult struggles of children who are English language learners and the difficulties the programs they serve or the programs that serve them encounter. We'll hear of prejudice and how it manifests itself towards entire communities of people because one member of that particular ethnic group commits a crime. It's pretty clear that right here in our community, even with respect to children, we're not treating the strangers in our midst the way our faith tradition, and really any faith tradition of which I'm aware, teaches we should. It's pretty clear that states and communities are adopting laws with draconian ways of treating the strangers in their midst. All the while, the courage is lacking for a federal program that will say we need to recognize the reality of the situation, set up a proper immigration policy, and find a way for those long-time law-abiding families who are living in fear in our country and have been for years to step out of the shadows and be able to fully contribute to the life of this nation, better provide for their families, just as all the immigrants that came before them have done. This coming June, our denomination's General Assembly will be held in Phoenix, Arizona, in the state where some of the most draconian anti-immigrant practices are taking place. And we're going to proclaim that our religion, and indeed all religions, say that this is not how you treat the stranger. We're going to say we're the same as our brothers and sisters who have come more recently to this country, and we'll stand with them. Thanks to the help from the Social Action Committee and from more fundraising that's going to take place here, I'm thrilled that at least two of our youth are willing to go and wanting to go to this General Assembly. I can't think of a better lesson that I would want our youth to learn firsthand than that we affirm the equal worth and dignity of everyone, that we insist upon justice, equity, and compassion in human relationships. And we stand against fear and cruelty, and we stand together on the side of love.